machlokes, a dispute between Bishama and Bisila regarding when Rosh Hashanah Leilanos is. Bishama is of the opinion that it's on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and we pass from like Bisila that it's on Tuvah Shvat, on the 15th of Shvat. What exactly does that mean that it's Rosh Hashanah Leilanos? In Yiddish folklore, they write up the way the trees in Europe, like in America also, used to be full of snow, and the wind would be howling. And the people would visualize as if the snow-covered trees were wearing talitim like we wear on Rosh Hashanah. Some had the meaning to wear a kippel on Rosh Hashanah, like most people have the meaning on Yom Kippur. So they visualize as if the trees were wearing kippel, as if they were wearing talitim, and the howling wind was the tzia shofar. Or if one tree was the tallest tree, was visualized in Yiddish literature, they have like that in poems, Hebrew poems. They have the way they visualize as if one would be a chazan and he would be singing, and a panateke, different things. It has nothing to do with that. Rosh Hashanah Lawrence has absolutely nothing to do with what we understand as Rosh Hashanah, a day of Tfilon, a day of Kiyah Shefer, and the Sanatek has nothing to do. What exactly does it mean that Tuvah Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Leilanos? So the commentaries on the very first mission of Rosh Hashanah, the first half, explain that there are four dinim, three of which clearly are relevant here, and the fourth one is a questionable one. The first is the din with respect to Hafrashas Trumas Amayim. There is a din that anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael, before you're permitted to eat it, whether it's grain, whether it's fruit, whether it's vegetables, whether it's bebala, kitnius, whatever it is, one must be mafresh Trumas Amayim before eating it, otherwise one violates the prohibition of eating pebbles. Now the Torah writes, Aser fi aser es kaltua zaracha hayote hasode shana shana. Chumash writes in Parashas Re'eh that you have to be mafresh Trumas Amayim shana shana. Every year you have to be mafresh. The Gemara derives from that part of Shana Shana that it's not proper, it's not permissible to be mafresh mishana achavato. Even though the hafroshes are identical, what you have to take out of the trumas, what you have to take out of the grain or the fruits or the vegetables that grow the first year of the Shemitah cycle is exactly identical with what you have to take the second year. You give the truma gedolah, the ma'aser rishon, the ma'aser sheni, it's exactly the same. When you give the fourth year, it's exactly identical with what you give the fifth year. But nevertheless, you're not supposed to be mafresh from one year on the other. So the question is, how does one determine when the Teres, which year the Teres belong to? If the Teres would be, like I say in Yeshiva, the Teres would be Yekis, and they'll begin to grow after Rosh Hashanah, and they would stop growing before the next Rosh Hashanah, so that everybody would know, oh, these Teres belong to Tavshin Mem Zayin, those Teres belong to last year Tavshin Mem Vav, and then the next Teres that grow next year belong to Tavshin Mem Ches. But it's not like that. The Teres begin growing one year, and they end growing the next year. There's always overlapping. They don't grow dafka within these confines. Dafka between Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says that every type of thing that grows in Eretz Yisrael has a koveya. The Gemara says that if it's tvua, if it's grain that you're speaking of, so the koveya, the determining factor, is the havoah shlish. When has it grown one third of its growth? It's also a question what that means, havoah shlish, but we won't go into the details. When did it grow the Havoah Shlish? Did the Havoah Shlish, did the developing till the point of one third occur during Tavshin Mem Zayin, in between this Rosh Hashanah and this Rosh Hashanah? Or did it occur before this Rosh Hashanah or after next Rosh Hashanah? When did it occur? When it comes to Yerukis, so the Gemara says it goes both to Lakita, when you detach it from the ground. Whenever you detach it from the ground, that's Koveh. When it comes to kitnias, it depends on the hashrasha. When you plant it in the ground, whatever year you planted in the ground, it's labeled as the parents that belong to that year. When it comes to teres or ilan, when it comes to fruits that grow on a tree, so then the halacha declares that it depends on chanota. What exactly chanota is also a very serious question. Those who studied Rosh Hashanah will remember that in the first parak, around Daf Yudalah, there is a dispute between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says the Chanata means the budding, the very beginning of the budding before anything is there. And Tosfos disagrees with Rashi and claims that Chanata doesn't mean the early stages, the very early stage of budding. It rather means something comparable to Havoah Shlish, that is ready one third growth. Rav Soloveitchik, one of his essays many years ago, pointed out, Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav, wasn't so familiar with Achreinim. He didn't even so many Svarim when he learned the Gemara, just Gemara with the Rishon. Now one of the rare Achreinim that he would use was the Malbusha Yonson, who happened to be the Rav in the town where he lived, in Chaslach, before his time. His father, Moshe Soloveitchik, was the Rav when he was there. But one of the previous Rabbanim had written a sefer, which is a classic, a very famous sefer, Malbusha Yonson, in which he has a whole section on Chayvah's Karka, where he speaks about the mitzvah of Tatluyus Ba'aretz. So in his section on Chayvah's Karka, in one of his Svarim, in one of the Malbusha Yontes, I remember years ago, the Rebbe used to speak about the Sefer Mavushi Yontes. I went to a bookstore once on the east side of Iran to buy the Sefer. I spent quite a lot of money. I bought the Sefer, and it turned out that it was the wrong chelik. That was the Mavushi Yontes, the chelik that the Rebbe never quoted. I got stuck with that, and that's the Chesh Mishpat that I rarely use. The Rebbe is quoting from the other Sefer, the Sefer that has about Chelik's character. So in the Mavushi Yontes, as well as other Sfarim, they point out this Machlekes Rashi and Taisus, what exactly does it mean, Chanota? But the deal is, when the parents are ilah, when they grow till approximately one third of their, about the same as avoah shlish by tzvur, if this occurs in one given year, so the parents belong to that year. If it occurs in a different year, then the parents belong to the other year. And it's relevant to this din of hafrasha mishana al-chavatar. You have to be mafrish from parents that grew. If you have a bushel of parents that grew in one year, a bushel of parents that grew in another year, even though the hafrashas are identical, that you're supposed to be mafrish, let's say, the first 2 years of the Shemitah cycle. The hafrashas are identical. You give Truma Gedolah, you give Ma'aser Rishon, you give Ma'aser Sheni. In the fourth and the fifth year, again, the hafrashas are identical. Still, the halacha says that you're not supposed to be mafrish mishana al-chavata. Now, the Mishnah says, now getting down to what is Tu B'Shvat all about. So the first din of Tu B'Shvat is that the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah that we shouldn't consider Rosh Hashanah, Echad B'Tishrei, the Rosh Hashanah for the Peres Eilon, but rather Tu B'Shvat, those Peres, those... let's say you have an apple tree, or an orange tree, whatever. So those apples or oranges that had their chanota, that will have their chanota this coming week, before next Shabbos of Tu B'Shvat, will be considered as belonging to last year. And those fruits, those apples or oranges that grow on the exact same tree, which will have their chanota after Tu B'Shvat, starting from Sunday on, they will be considered as belonging to Tavshin Mem Zayin. It doesn't go from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. With respect to Tzvuah, with respect to Yerokas, with respect to Kitnias, with respect to all other things that grow in Eretz Yisrael, the Rosh Hashanah for Hafrashas, Trumas, and Maisis is Rosh Hashanah, Echad B'Tishrei. With respect to Teres Limon, with respect to the fruits that grow on the tree, the cutoff point is not Rosh Hashanah, but rather Tu B'Shvat. And it doesn't depend on whether you've harvested it, it doesn't depend on whether it's fully grown, it doesn't depend on when you planted the tree, it doesn't depend on when it began to grow, it depends on Chanota. Chanota meaning either according to Rashi, the beginning of the budding, the very beginning of the budding, according to Tosfos, the way it's generally assumed, it's the later stage in the development, which is approximately equivalent to Havoah Shlish. This din of Hafrasha Mishana Al-Chavato doesn't really have too much relevance, practical relevance for the people who live in America, because we're not mafresh any Trumas and Maisis on anything except for what's exported from Eretz Yisrael. But it does have practical relevance for the Rabbonim who give Ashgochas on the bakeries. When you have a bake shop, the din is also that there is a mitzvah of Hafrasha's Chalo in Eretz Yisrael, whether you bake bread or cake or cookies. You have to be mafresh Chalo if you bake enough. If you bake a large enough volume, and the din requires, with respect to hafrasha shchala, also that you're not supposed to be mafresh shchala mishon al chavrato. That means if I have flour that came from grain that grew, doesn't matter whether the grain grew in Eretz Yisrael or the grain grew in America. Min haTorah makes a difference. Only if you're baking the cake in Eretz Yisrael, the cake, the cookies, or the bread, or the challah, whatever, then you're obligated min haTorah to be mafresh shchala. And we who live in Chutz Lauritz, we live far away from Eretz Yisrael, are only obligated mid the rabbanon. To be mafresh chalas chutzlo, it says, because it's only made the rabbana, there are many, many kulas. But still, the din is you have to be mafresh chalas chutzlo. So what happens if I have flour, which came from grain, that grew in 1 year, and I baked bread, or cookies, whatever. Then I have flour from grain that grew in a different year, either before or after, doesn't matter, and I baked more cake, and more cookies, and more bread, more chalas, whatever. After having baked everything, then I decide I want to be mafresh chalas. So the din is that you're not supposed to be mafresh chala mishana al chavato. You have to be mafresh miyos hashana al os hashana. The Gemara applied this din. Aserti ases kol tvua zaracha yotze asod hashana shana, that each year should have its own afrosha. The din is not only limited to trumas and maizes. This din applies even to afrosha chala. Sometimes it comes up in the bakeries because in some bakeries they have a system whereby they set aside a piece of dough and they put it in the freezer, and then instead of being mafresh challah, every time they bake some more cake or cookies or challah, they just make a declaration that they now declare that the next eighth of an inch, going from right to left or whatever, the next eighth of an inch should become challah on the dough that they're baking, that they're kneading today. And then every day when they make more dough, so they say, the next eighth of an inch. And they know how many inches of a piece of dough they have in the freezer. And they keep out being mafresh challah from that dough, on the dough that they're kneading today. So the bakeries have to be careful that they have to check the sacks of flour to make sure that they're not being mafish mishana al chavetam. This is improper lachatchila, and b'diyevet it's a question if it's chal. If somebody's mafish trumas amaisis mishana al chavetam, the din is that even b'diyevet it's not chal. With respect to hafroshas chalo, it's a dispute among the poskim, and with respect to chalas chutzlords, we would be makel on that. But lachatchila, it's certainly improper to be mafish mishana al chavetam, even with respect to chalas chutzlords. So this then is the first din, the first relevant halacha of Tu B'Shvat. What does it mean that Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah Leilon? Is the way we pass from like Beisilu, according to Beishama, it's Rosh Chodesh Shvat, according to Beisilu, it's Tu B'Shvat. It means with respect to the din of Hafrosh and Mishon Al-Chavetah, you have to be mafresh from those peris that grew in the same year as the peris that you want to be mafresh on. This second din is a more important din, perhaps, a more significant din, that sometimes the Hafroshes that you set aside are not identical. And the first 2 years of the Shemitah cycle, there is a 7 year cycle that we call the Shemitah cycle. Every 7th year is Shemitah, and there's no obligation to be mafresh anything that grows on the Shemitah, during the Shemitah year. Unless it grew b'shus hanochri, then you have a question. If you sell a land of Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, so then the laws of Shemitah may or may not apply, then you have a question as to whether you have to be mafresh trumas maaser. That's a different question. But leaving out that issue, if the land belongs to a Jew during the Shemitah year, then the din is that no hafroshes trumas maaser are required at all. But during the 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, so the first 2 years have identical hafroshes. You have to take off Truma Gedoyla first, 2% for the Kohen, then 10% of what's left, Maaser Rishon for the Levi, and 10% of what's left after that, it's going to be approximately 9% of everything, as Maaser Sheni. On the 3rd year of the Shemitah cyycle, you give again Truma Gedoyla, 2%, Maaser Rishon, and instead of giving Maaser Sheni, you're Mafresh Maaser Rani. The 4th and the 5th year, you again do the same as the first 2 years, and the 6th year is identical with the 3rd year. So here the question is, what if you have peiros that grew, they started growing in the 2nd year and they finished growing in the 3rd year? You have peiros that started growing in the 3rd year and they finished growing in the 4th year, or they began growing in the 5th year and they finished growing in the 6th year, from the 6th to the 7th. So how do you determine the status of the peiros? They grew half from 1 year, half from the other year. So again, the halacha says, we have a koveya, we have a certain stage in the growth of the peiros. By the tvua, by grain, that koveya, that stage, is the havoashlish, when it grows till, when it reaches the point of 1/3 of its ripeness. And by the kitnias, it depends on the shas hashosha when it's planted in the ground, then by the irokas when it's harvested, and by the perisilin, it depends on the chanota, whatever that means again. Now, if this chanota occurs on the perisilin, I would have thought that it depends on between one Rosh Hashanah and the next Rosh Hashanah, so that's what the Mishnah tells me, that it's not so. You go from Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat. Any peiros that have the Chanota in between this Tu B'Shvat and next Tu B'Shvat are considered peiros Shmita, and there's no Hafrosha at all. And any peiros that have their Chanota before Tu B'Shvat are considered belonging to the 6th year, and you have to be Mafresh Trumas and Maisis. They have the status of peiros Shishis, they're not considered peiros Shvits. You have to be mafish, maaser rani. And again, whatever peiros had the chanota before the Tu B'Shvat of the 3rd year belong to the 2nd year. That you have to be mafish, maaser sheni. Whatever had the chanota after Tu B'Shvat of the 3rd year, that belongs to the 3rd year, and you have to be mafish, maaser rani. That's the second din of Rosh Hashanah being considered, of Tu B'Shvat being considered the Rosh Hashanah Leilonis. The Gemara tells an interesting story about Rabbi Akiva in the first parak of Rosh Hashanah, that Rabbi Akiva didn't know whether he should consider Rosh Chodesh Shvat as the Rosh Hashanah Leilonos or Tu B'Shvat as Rosh Hashanah Leilonos. What do you mean he didn't know? Whenever you have a dispute between Beishama and Bisil, so we know the din is like Bisil. And the Gemara says that it's forbidden to follow Beishama. He cast it against Beishama. You're not allowed to follow Beishama. So the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva didn't remember which was the opinion of Beishama, which was the opinion of Bisil. The Gemara says, Gemara yistatikla, his tradition was unclear. He didn't remember whether Beisilu, he was going to follow the view of Beisilu, but he just didn't remember whether they were of the opinion that Rosh Chodesh Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Leilonos or Tu B'Shvat. So because he wasn't sure what the din is, so the peiros that had their chanota in those fruits that grew on his trees, he had a farm. So the fruits that grew on his trees, in between the fruits that had their chanota, in between Rosh Chodesh Shvat and Tu B'Shvat, he was mafish both in between the 2nd and the 3rd year. He was mafish maisa oni and maisa sheni. He went lechumra in both directions. So the Gemara asks, but we have a tradition that whenever there's a dispute between the poskim, so you have to follow one opinion or the other. And whoever follows the coolest of the both opinions, the Gemara considers a Rasha, because he's not following any opinion. And whoever follows the chumrah of the both opinions is considered a fool. The Gemara says, "Haksil b'chay shachayla," that the foolish people walk in the darkness. That refers to the one who follows the chumrah of the shami and the chumrah of the sil. So the Gemara asks, why did Rabbi Akiva act like a fool to be mafresh both Maiserani and Maisersheni? Isn't that Aksil Bachai Shachel, the one who follows the Chumash of the Sham and the Chumash of the Sil? So the Gemara says, no, the person is only considered a fool if he knows what the Sham says and he knows what the Sil will say. He knows who said what. And he knows what camp he belongs to. He belongs to the Sham, he belongs to the Sil, whatever. So then, if he's machma for the other sheep, so that's a fool. What is he machma for? The din is like this. So what does he have to be machma? But if it's Gemara's topic, like the Gemara says, if he really doesn't remember who said what, he doesn't know what is the opinion of the Sil. If he really does know what the din is, so then you can't fault him for going l'chumer in both directions. You can't call such a person a shaita. You can't say aksil b'chay shachaylich. It's not foolishness. It's because of that Gemara that the Gemara says whenever you don't know what the din is, then you can't fault, you can't consider him a shaita for going l'chumer. It's because of this theme in the Gemara that we have introduced into halacha by the Hasid Ashkenaz. This is the Rokeach and the Maharam Rutenberg and a whole group of Bali Hatesis who lived in Germany. In the 1200s and 1300s, they introduced the theme in Psak Halacha, this theme of being machne to be yotze yidei kol hashitas. It was before their times, it was ungenum and it was assumed that everybody followed his rabbi's opinion. In fact, those who, the Chachmei Ashkenaz had their opinion, the Bali Ataisis, and they followed their shita, and the Chachmei Svard had their opinion, and they followed their shita. And sort of in Shulchan Aruch, that's the way it's presented. The Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, usually follows the party line of the Chachmei Sfarad, and he doesn't feel obligated to be machmer for the Chachmei Ashkenaz. And the Ramor usually follows his party line of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, and he doesn't feel you have to be machmer for the Chachmei Sfarad. And at this, the Maharam Rutenberg introduced this new theme to the Yotze Yidei Kol Hashitas. That a lot of times when you have a machloikis, instead of taking a stand, he says, "Ein bi'adeinu la'achriya." We don't have the ability to paskin who's right and who's wrong. So he recommends that you should go l'chumer. This was his institution that, you know, we have a practice, we have a minig, that on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, we have either a pri chodosh, we have a new pri, a new fruit, a shachyanu. You put a shachyanu on the table, or you buy a new suit to wear. Why do you need a new suit? Because there's a dispute in the Rishonim as to whether one recites shachyanu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Because on the one hand it's a yom ha'richto, so why say shachyanu? On the other hand it's a sfeker yom, so you should say shachyanu. Like on the second day Pesach you say shachyanu, the second day Shavuot, the second day Sukkot you say shachyanu. So because Rosh Hashanah is a dispute, the Rosh quotes the different opinions in Rosh Hashanah. So the Maharam Rutenberg suggested that the Yetzi, they call Hashitas, you should take a pri chodesh, a beged chodesh. Or by Afrosh Eschal also there's a dispute. If you make cake and you don't mix in any water at all, you only mix in juices, and you have enough cake that you have to be mafresh challah, but there was no water mixed in, so this is a dispute in the Mishnah whether one is obligated to be mafresh challah. And this was a dispute among the early Rishonim how to paskin, and it was again a later dispute among the later Rishonim how to paskin. And the Maharam Rutmer came up with this suggestion: you should always pour in a few drops of water in order not to get involved in machlekes. You should always pour in a little water. You shouldn't make cake That's only with maypayers. And you have in Shulchan Aruch a whole list of these type of chumras that the Maharam Rutenberg introduced. A new theme was introduced to be machmer for their both opinions. This is based on this Gemara that Rabbi Akiva, Gemara's topic, like, didn't know what the din was. Rabbi Akiva really didn't know. He really didn't know what the tradition was, whether Bifilu said Rosh Chodesh Shvat or Bifilu said Tu B'Shvat. By us, it's not exactly the same. By us, it's we know what all the opinions are. We know what the din really should be. But out of Yerushalayim, the Maharam Rutenberg introduced this chumrah that we treat it as if ein bi'adeinu la'achriya. How can we paskin against Rashi? Who are we to paskin against the Rambam? So the Maharam Rutenberg introduced this theme of Yerushalayim yetsi yidei shneim. That's how the pasuk speaks in Koheles. But Yerushalayim should be machma for both opinions. The third din about Tu B'Shvat. I'll say the dinim a little out of order. The third din about Tu B'Shvat, which is a dispute in the Poskim, is regarding Shemitah. The din states that all the peiros that grow in Eretz Yisrael during the Shnas HaShemitah, this is the Shemitah year, have a status of Kedushas Peiros Shvit. They have a special Kedusha. This is derived from the Poskim in Parshas Behar, where the Chumash says that the seventh year has Kedusha. It says Kodesh Tiyalachem. And then a few psukim later it repeats again Kodesh Tiyalachem. So Rashi asks in his commentary on Chumash, why does the pasuk repeat the same idea twice, that the seventh year has a Kedusha. So Rashi explains, based on the Talmud, based on the Sifra, that the first Pasuk is stating that the year has Kedusha. There's a Kedusha Sazman. Shabbos has Kedusha. Yom Tov has Kedusha. So this whole year of the Shnas HaShemitah has Kedusha. The second Pasuk that repeats again that there is Kedusha is not referring to the Kedusha Sazman, but rather to the Kedusha HaPeiros. That whatever Peiros grow in Eretz Yisrael during the Shnas HaShemitah have a special status of Kedusha. L'mayinach Kemina, what's the relevance of the Peiros growing during the Shnas HaShemitah having Kedusha l'may nafkamin? So the Pasuk has the whole, the Pesukim, the various Pesukim that indicate what the special dinim are in connection with the Kedusha's Peiros Shemitah. One of the dinim that the Chumash has is Pois HaShabbos Oretz Lachem Liyochlo, that it's a mitzvah. Some Pasuk say it's a mitzvah to eat Peiros Shemitah. And when you eat the Peiros Shemitah, let's say I eat an apple that grew during Shemitah, I say Bari Pri Huayt, and I say Asher Kedushonim B'mitzvah Yisavitzvon V'alachilas Peiros Shemitah. That it's a special mitzvah. We don't accept that view that you say a bracha, but it's still a question. Maybe it still is a mitzvah. Maybe it's a mitzvah to eat the Peiros Shemitah even though you don't say a bracha. Others claim it's not a mitzvah. The Chazon Ish has a whole attack against this. This is the opinion of the Megillas Esther. One of the commentaries on the Sefer HaMitzvahs lost his mother. His mother's name was Esther. His mother died just as he was about to print the Sefer. So just as a commemoration to his mother, so he named the Sefer Megillas Esther. Named it after his mother. So in the Megillas Esther, which is the commentary on the side of the Sefer HaMitzvahs La Harambam, he claims that this is a mitzvah sesem in Atara to eat the Peiros Shviz. That's why others say you say a bracha. The Chazon Ish has a whole attack against that. He says it's not true. There is no such mitzvah sesem in Atara. That pasuk Shabbos Ratz Lachem Liyochlo only implies that there are Isurim, Liyochlo V'lo L'schora, that you're not permitted to do big business with Peiros Shviz. Liyochlo V'lo L'hefsid, you're not permitted to throw out Peiros Shviz. You're not permitted to use Peiros Shviz for Korban Mincha. Other halachas, you're not permitted to make medications from Peiros Shviz. Different restrictions. And the Gemara has many other dinim based on the fact that the Peiros that grow during the Shnas HaShemitah have a status of Kedushas Peiros Shviz. So here there is a dispute, and the commentaries on the very first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Kiva Eiger has a comment, and the Sfasemis discusses, and the Rashash and others saw him on the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah point out that there seems to be an explicit machlokas, a dispute among the commentaries as to whether the Tu B'Shvat is considered the Rosh Hashanah Lilonot with respect to Kedushas Peiros Shviz. That means like this: if I have a fruit that grew on a tree and the Chanot already occurred before next Shabbos, Chanot already occurred today, so I say that this fruit belongs to last year and these fruits don't have a Kedushas Peiros Shviz. And if a fruit will grow next year, after next Rosh Hashanah, after Shemitah will be over again, the Shemitah year goes from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. When you speak of the Kedusha Sazman, that the sabbatical year has a Kedusha Sazman, that's from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. That's not going to change with respect to Peiros Elam. But the question is to determine that any given fruit has a Kedusha Peiros Shviz, does that depend on whether it had a Chanot in between Rosh Hashanah, this Rosh Hashanah and that Rosh Hashanah? Or do you say no? Again, here the cutoff point is to the Shvat. Those Peiros that had Chanota before Tu B'Shvat, even though it's in the middle of Shemitah, it's already a couple of months. We had Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevis, and half of Shvat, that's 4.5 months. Whatever Peiros that had Chanota in the first 4.5 months belong to last year. They don't have a Kedushas Peiros Shviz. So whatever Peiros will have Chanota next year, in the first 4.5 months, will again belong to the Shemitah year and will have Kedushas Peiros Shviz. So this is a big dispute among the Poskim. The Rambam writes explicitly that it's not so. The Rambam says that the cutoff point is Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. And other Achrayim say that it's not so. And then they fish around to find Rishonim who explicitly disagree with the Rambam. So the Achrayim point out that this is a Mefurish HaMachlokes, whether with respect to Kedushas Peiros Shviz, do I declare also that Rosh Hashanah Lilonos is Tu B'Shvat. These are three nafkaminas. Two of them are clear nafkaminas with respect to Tu B'Shvat. The first being not to be mafish Mishana Achavata. The second, the issue as to what hafrashas you have to be mafresh, whether you have to separate Maizu Sheni and Maizu Rani. The third is the questionable issue, the disputed question as to whether determination of Kedushas Peiros Shviz also depends on Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat, or depends on Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. And the fourth din, which is not disputed, is the most relevant din as far as we are concerned, we who live in Chutz Loretz, we who still live in Chutz Loretz and haven't yet moved there to some. The fourth din is with respect to Orlo and Revai. The din in the Chumash reads as follows: Ki sevoyer al ha'aretz. Torah says, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, when a titan calls Eitz Michael, and you plant a tree that's a fruit-bearing tree,
Ba'aralta mar losoi, you have to leave the fruit in a state of Easter. Shalosh shanim areyon yidu lachem, for the first 3 years, if nothing grows, avada good. But even if something grows the first 3 years, you're not permitted to eat it. Whatever grows the first 3 years is also ba'achila and also ba'anu. And then the pasuk continues to say, ba'ashana harviyis, and whatever grows in the 40th year, kol piri yakodesh elulim lashem, all of the fruits that grow on the tree have the status of kedusha, and it doesn't say what in the world you're supposed to do with the kedusha. What do you bring it to the Beis Hamikdash? What do you do with it? So the Gemara derives from a series of psukim that has the same status as Maaseh Sheni, that one is obligated to take the pears that grow in the 4th year to Yerushalayim to eat, and they must be eaten the kedusha of the tahara. And in the event that the person is unable to bring them to Yerushalayim, or he's unable to eat them the kedusha of the tahara, then he has to be paid to them on money, and take the money to Yerushalayim and buy boka batona b'yayin b'ashech. He has to buy some kind of food with that money and eat that b'kedusha v'tahara. Bizman hazeh, that one is unable to eat anything b'kedusha v'tahara, because all the people are tummy and all the food we're going to buy will be tummy. So we have no breiris, so we have to be paid the Maaseh Sheni and the Neter Avai on money. Then we have to destroy the money to make sure that nobody by mistake will be nene from this money. So these dinim are written in the Chumash, the dinim of Orla. When you plant a tree, it doesn't apply to vegetables. Every year you plant the vegetables all over again. Din of Orla and Ravai only applies to fruits that grow on a tree. If you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael, it says, Kisavai al-Haret, when you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael, for the first 3 years, if anything grows, it's also b'achila, it's also b'ano. Arelim yu'alachem, whatever grows the 4th year, is Kodesh, Hilulim, Hashem, has a status of Kedusha. What are you supposed to do with it? So the Gemara says, that's the same din as Maaseh Sheni. And then the Chumash says, Bashana Hamishis, and whatever grows in the 5th year, you can eat. You're free to eat whenever you want. Bikadusha, Shalab Bikadusha, Bitahara, Shalab Bitahara, doesn't matter. This din, although in the Chumash it's written only with respect to Eretz Yisrael, the Mishnah in Kiddushin at the end of the first paragraph writes that it applies even to Chutz Lars. That although all of the other agricultural mitzvahs, the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, and Hafrashas Trumas and Maisvis, and Leket, Shikho, Peah, and everything else, Peret, Olo, so many other dinim. All the agricultural mitzvahs are limited only to Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah says that there are two exceptions to the rule, that there are two of the agricultural laws that apply even to Chutz Lars. One is the law of Chadosh, we won't get involved in that, that's a problem on its own. And the other din is the law of Arlo, that the fruits that grow the first 3 years, that din applies even to Chutz Lars. Why is this so? So the Mishnah says it's a halacha. What does that mean, a halacha? Halacha means a din. What kind of an explanation is that? So the Gemara has a dispute how to translate the words in the Mishnah. Orla me halacha. That orla is a halacha, that it's also a chutzpah. Everything is a halacha. Halacha means a din. Everything we were discussing tonight is a halacha. It's not minhagim. These are real dinim. So the Gemara has a dispute how to interpret the Mishnah. One opinion is that it's mehilchas medina. It means that it's only a takana de rabbanon. That orla should apply chutzpah. It's against the Chumash. The Chumash says, tisavoyo al haaretz. Only when you come to Eretz Yisrael, if you don't live in Eretz Yisrael, so the din of Arlo is only by the Rabbanon. Most of the din is only by the Rabbanon. The Gemara has a second opinion, and that's a generally accepted opinion. The Gemara says no. Halacha means halacha l'moishe mitzina. In this Mishnah, when it says Arlo applies in Chutz Lorenz, may halacha, what it means is that this was an oral tradition that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, that even though the Chumash seems to imply that the laws of Arlo are limited to Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, it's not true. They apply even to chutzpah. And that's the way it's generally assumed. And the Gemara poses a kasha. How can it be? Halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, an oral tradition that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har-Sinai, is a biblical din. It's a real din deraisa. It's not just a din derabbanon. We have a Mishnah in another place, not in Kiddushin, a Mishnah in Zroim that says, when you have a Sofik Orla in Eretz Yisrael, you go the Chumrah, because Orla in Eretz Yisrael is a real din deraisa. And we say that there's a din of Sveika deraisa l'chumrah. But if you have a suffix, if you have any doubt as to the status of a tree that's growing in Chutz Lorenz, let's say you have a suffix on Orla Chutz Lorenz, then the Mishnah says you go to Kula. Suffix Orla Chutz Lorenz, you have a right to be lenient. So the Gemara asks, if one assumes that it's Mehilchas Medina, that Orla applying to Chutz Lorenz, that the trees that are planted outside of Eretz Yisrael also are subject to the laws of Orla, that the first 3 years the Peiros are also Bachil Banu, if the whole din would only be also Medir Rabbanon, so then we understand that Sveika Lekula. But if you should assume like the second opinion, that all of Chutz Lorenz is halachah l'moshe mi-Sinai, so it's a real din deraisa, it's a real biblical law, so we ought to apply the principle of sveika deraisa l'chumra here. Why do you go l'kula? So the Gemara answers, kach nemra halacha. That's part of the halachah l'moshe mi-Sinai. The halacha was formulated in such a way that vado asur and sveika muta. That's part of the halacha, that sofek all of Chutz Lorenz is muta. What exactly that means is a major dispute among the commentaries. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos lists off, the Rambam wrote a whole book that's called Sefer HaMitzvos, where he tries to list off which are the 613 mitzvahs. Many other Rishonim, also Gaonim, compose different Svarim. They disagree with each other. They're all working on the premise, on the assumption that there are Taryag mitzvahs, as the Gemara says at the very end of Makkos, and they have a dispute how to make the Cheshmah, how to figure out the 613 mitzvahs. The Vilna Gaon also has a different cheshbon. The Gamri a different cheshbon. He says he has a whole different mahalach from all the Rishonim. How to figure out 613. Everybody has a different cheshbon. So the Rambam gives you 14 principles. And the Sefer HaMitzvos is divided into two parts. The first half he has Yud Dalet Sharoshim, 14 rules and regulations as to which mitzvah is going to count, which is not going to count, which is going to count as one mitzvah, which is going to count as several mitzvahs. Like he says, you don't count as 52 mitzvahs to keep Shabbos, each Shabbos. Parshas Bereishis and Parshas Noach and Parshas Lech Lecha and Parshas Vayir. It's one mitzvah to keep Shabbos. And he's not going to count 39 dinim of Shabbos. Not to plant and not to turn on the lights and not to harvest and not to strike a match and not to blow out a fire. He's not going to count every malacha as a separate mitzvah. Not to be Mechal Shabbos is one mitzvah. All Shabbos of the year. He's not going to count Pesach as seven mitzvahs to keep the first day Pesach, second day Pesach, third day Pesach. Pesach is Pesach, is one mitzvah. He gives you all the kolalim when you count as one mitzvah and when as many. One of his klal and one of his rules and regulations is that he's only going to count biblical mitzvahs. He's not going to count rabbinical mitzvahs, because the passage in the Talmud says that 613 mitzvahs were given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. Taryag mitzvahs namal on Moshe Mitzvah. So that sounds like it's only speaking of biblical commands. It's not referring to rabbinical mitzvahs. And not only, the Rambam says, not only is he not going to rechen arayin, not only is he not going to include in the listing of the taryag mitzvahs dinim derabbanon, he's not even going to include halachas l'moshe mi-Sinai, oral traditions, or any other dinim deraisa biblical laws that are derived from the yud gimel mida shatar nedreshes them. Only things that are pshuta shel mikra. That's what the Rambam writes in his first klal. He's only going to count dinim that are deraisa, not dinim that are derabbanon, not even dinim that are teresh l'apet. So the Ramban gets all excited and has a whole attack against the Rambam. He says dinim derabbanon, he understands why the Rambam doesn't want to count. But dinim that are halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, laws that are based on an oral tradition, or laws that are derived from Sukkim and the Chumash, based on the Yud Gimel Midrash Shatar Nedreshes Pem, those are real biblical dinim. Why doesn't the Rambam want to count? What, the Rambam doesn't accept the oral tradition? He doesn't believe in the Torah Shema Pem? What's it though? So he says he doesn't have a whole attack, he doesn't understand why the Rambam doesn't want to count. Then he says he thinks the Rambam made a mistake. He thinks the Rambam must have misunderstood this Gemara to say the Safik Arlo B'chutz Loretz is mutter, because we treat Orla b'chutzlot, which is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, is if it were like a din derabbanon. That's just like there's a din of sveika derabbanon l'kula. So too there's a principle of safek halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai l'kula, that this should apply to every halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. So he says, no, the Rama made a mistake. It's not true. The Gemara says safek orla b'chutzlot mutter is limited dafka to orla. It doesn't apply to other halachas l'moshe mi-Sinai. Only applies to Orla, and any other halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai has the same status as a biblical din, and we should say that Safik deraisa should be lukum. As this whole attack. So some commentaries on the side claim the Rambam never said it. The Rambam never said that Safik. The Rambam doesn't say a word over there about Safik halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. The Rambam just claims that when you're counting taryag mitzvahs, you can only count those mitzvahs that are pshuta shel mikra. He doesn't say that the others are not deraisa. The Torah Shebaal Peh is also deraisa of a biblical nature. But you don't include it, it's not to be included in the mispor and the cheshbon of the taryag mitzvahs, of the 613 mitzvahs. Where did the Rambam see in the Rambam that he thinks the Rambam doesn't say a word there about Safek Orla B'chutz Lord, whether it applies to all other halachas l'moshe mi-Sinai? So the later Achrayim point out, however, that the Rambam does say it, although he doesn't write it here in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, but he writes it in the Arach HaZokeh, in Hilchas Mikvot. The Rambam quotes in Mishnah Maseches Mikvot. Mishnah says, if somebody went to a mikveh and was toivel, somebody was tomei, or you have kelim, you want to be matul kelim, whatever, and you use a mikveh, so the mikveh has to have a minimum volume of water, has to have 40 saw. If you don't have 40 saw, the mikveh is no good. If you have more than 40 saw, it's certainly good. Savada good. But it has to have a minimum of 40 saw. What if the person was toivel in a mikveh, somebody was toivel kelim in a mikveh, and it's a suffix whether the mikveh had 40 saw or didn't have 40 saw? So the mission says you go to Chumre and you have to be Tevil over again. You have to be Tevil Kalem over again, and the person has to be Tevil again. So the Rambam writes in the Yarach HaZokeh, even though the requirement for our boim saw, for the 40 saw, is only halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, we don't have the right to go to Kula, Because the basic principle of mikveh is a din d'oraisa, so even though the shear is halacha moshe Sinai, you have to go l'chumrah. So the Rambam writes the Sefer that if you have a din that's legamrei halacha moshe Sinai, then you would go l'kula. The only time you go l'chumrah is if the din is d'oraisa, the furish bikra, and the shear is only halacha moshe Sinai. But if the din is halacha moshe Sinai, the Rambam does hold the Sefer that you go l'kula, like the Ramban understood him as saying. The Rambam's opinion is that when you say that safek arla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter, even though it's halacha moshe Sinai, the Rambam understood that that's not limited to Abke Torah, that applies to all halachas moshe Sinai. And the Ramban disagrees with that. Ramban's opinion is that only a safek arla, that's the one and only halacha moshe Sinai, but the Gemara claims that kach nemra halacha, this was the way the halacha was formulated, this was part of the tradition, the oral tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu, that safek arla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter, but any other safek halacha moshe Sinai, we would have to go l'chumrah. So this din of Arla applies in Chutz La'aretz. Even though the Chumash says, Kisavoy Rav Ha'aretz, if you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, either mid the Rabbanon or Mitam Halacha Moshe Sinai, one or the other, the Mishnah states in Kiddushin, and that's what we practice today also, the din of Arla, the parents that grow the first 3 years, Arasa Bachil Ba'anoa, this din applies even in Chutz La'aretz. Now the Mishnah tells us, and the Gemara has a lot of dinim on this in Rosh Hashanah, and the Shulchan Aruch has, these dinim are spelled out in Yeruday, Simi Reish Tzarek Dal, that's the main din. The idea of Tu B'Shvat is mainly the main din of Tu B'Shvat and Shulchan Aruch is with respect to these dinim of Arla. How do I count the years? If I plant a tree, or if I plant a bush, let's say I plant a bush that grows berries, also the same din. It says explicitly in the Gemara that the laws of Arla apply to any fruit that grows on a tree, whether it's a tall tree or it's a short tree. It's a bush is also, it doesn't matter whether it's 3 tefachim above the ground or it's within 3 tefachim to the ground. The Lovewood, the Magen Avraham has a meaning that if you eat berries that grow on a bush, so do you say Ho'adama, do you say Bar Pihuei, then such, it depends. If the bush is within 3 tefachim to the ground, so it's Lovewood, so it's like growing on the ground. So whatever grows on the ground is Bar Pihuei. If the bush is above 3 tefachim to the ground, then you say Bar Pihuei. But that's only a meaning that they had in some communities in Europe. In most places, they never had that meaning. In America, I don't think anybody heard of that meaning. It's in 3 tefachim, above 3 tefachim. We assume that you always say bari pihoit on whatever grows on a bush. It's not bari pihadama. But Gemara says the ruling is, it depends. If it stays from year to year, if the bush stays from year to year and the pears grow on the same branches, then it's going to be a bari pihoit. If the bush collapses, and then the next year it has to grow all over again, then you don't say Bar Pihuei, then it's Taka Bar Pihuei. And the same rule, that's a Klal De'araisa. That ruling, that determination as to whether any given vegetation is labeled as a fruit or as a vegetable, that's relevant not only with respect to Bar Pihuei versus Bar Pihuei, which is only a din de Rabbanon, the difference whether you say this bracha, that bracha, is only a rabbinical din, that is the definition with respect to the din De'araisa of Arla in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. That's how I determine whether the laws of Arla apply to any given tree or bush or not. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, a dispute is quoted regarding bananas or regarding strawberries, because the roots of the banana tree remain under the ground from year to year. You don't have to plant it again, but the whole tree collapses. I remember Rabbi Tenma told us when I was in his class 30 years ago, he told us he didn't believe that. So at that time he was doing research at Columbia. He didn't believe that the banana tree collapses. So he planted, he had all the resources he would need there. So he planted his own banana tree in Colombia, and lo and behold, that's what happened. The whole tree collapsed, and only the roots remained under the ground, and then the next year, the whole tree grew up again. And the bananas that grew the second year didn't grow from the same branches that the bananas grew from the first year. So that case of the banana or the strawberry is the same. The roots remain in the ground, below the ground, and the branches, or the vines, whatever you call it, that the strawberries grow on, collapse, and the strawberries the next year will not grow on the same vines, on the same branches that they grew on the first year. So in that case of the banana and the strawberry are rather trees that are other bushes, the trees that are similar, there is a dispute quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. It's strange that it's quoted with respect to the din de Rabbanon of Bar Pihu Adama versus Bar Pihu Eitz. It should really be quoted over here in Yeruday Simireish Tarek Dali, where it's a biblical issue over here as to whether you treat such a bush or such a tree as a fruit or as a vegetable. But it's the same achlokes, it's the same shaila. Is it a fruit or is it a vegetable? So there's a dispute. So with respect to the bracha, the mechaber gives a psar. The mechaber in Hilchos Bracha says, if by mistake a person says Bari Pihuetz instead of Bari Pihadoma, so the Mishnah says, you're not yetzet. If you say Bari Pihuetz on potatoes, you're not yetzet. But if you said Bar Pi Hadama and oranges or apples, so you are Yotze. So whenever you have a toss-up, whenever you have a suffix between Bar Pi and Bar Pi Hadama, so you say the bracha Bar Pi Hadama, so you're sure, you say for sure. For sure you didn't say the, you're Yotze the bracha b'diyevet. So with respect to brachas, the Mechaber Paskins, the Yosef Kara Paskins, that you say Bar Pi Hadama. That's why the common practice is that we say Bar Pi Hadama on bananas, and we say Bar Pi Hadama on strawberries. But with respect to the laws of Varla, what's the din? So if you live in Eretz Yisrael, where the laws of Varla are Mefurish Bikra, and the Mishnah says that a Safek Varla in Eretz Yisrael is Lechumre, so then if you have an issue of a banana tree, you have an issue of a strawberry bush, so then the din would be Lechumre. You have to consider the Safek in Shulchan Aruch. So Misafik, you say Bar Pi Hadama, but Misafik, you should forbid the bananas that grow in the first 3 years or the strawberries that grow in the first 3 years. As far as Chutzlor is concerned, so there we say that that's a Safik girl of Chutzlor, and we can be Mekel. That's how we assume. So this is really a Chiddush. We assume that Safik girl of Chutzlor is Mutter, not only if the Safik is regarding the facts. Let's say somebody buys a home, and the home has with it a tree or bushes, and he doesn't know when the previous Balabos planted. He bought from a Goy, and the Goy flew away to South Africa. And he doesn't know when did the previous owner of the house plant these bushes, when did he plant the trees. Well, he replanted, he moved bushes from one place to the other, and I don't know when did he replant the bushes or replant the trees. When you replant, it's also a din of Arla. So you start all over again. So the din is that's considered a Safik Arla B'chut Florek, and you don't even have to call up the other fella to find out, even if the other fella is Jewish, even if he's religious. You don't even have to call them up to find out. That's how the Gemara says. That Safik Arla B'chut Florek is Mutter, even if it's a Safik She'ef Shalavara B'kal. A Safik that you can easily ascertain what the facts are. You're not obligated to be Mevar. It's a special din only in Safik Arla B'chut Florek. So this din of Safik Arla B'chut Florek, Azlina Lekule, that you have the right to be lenient, not only applies if you are in doubt as to how old the bush is, but let's say I planted the bushes myself and I lost cheshbon, I lost track, I don't remember whether they're 5 years old or 3 years old. I don't know whether it's Asa Bahano or it's not Asa Bahano. So the din is, whenever it's any suffix as to the facts, you have a right to go Lekula in Chutz Lo'ot. But not only, says the Favish in the Gemara, and Brachas, Daplan Rav, not only do you have a right to go Lekula, when you have a suffix, Garla B'Chutz Lo'ot, if the suffix is in Mitzias, the suffix in the facts, even if you know all the facts clearly, and my suffix is what the din is, I have a suffix on a banana tree or a suffix on a strawberry bush, whether bananas and strawberries are considered fruits or they're considered vegetables, Afi Alocha. Whether the fact that the roots stay under the ground, that I don't have to plant it again, that's sufficient reason to declare bananas and strawberries as fruits. But he's saying, no, but since the branches from which they actually are going to sprout, they're going to come out from, those branches will not remain from 1 year to the next. I should not consider it like a fruit. So this is a suffix in halacha. This is the tour. And Hilchas Birchas Hanen and quotes these two opinions. So this, in the case of a suffix in din, one might have thought perhaps that you don't say suffix arla b'chutz lo'etz l'kula. So the Gemara says in brachas, not so. And daf lam izav. The Gemara says explicitly that even if the suffix is a suffix in din, not only a suffix in mitzias as to what the facts are, even if the suffix is one of halacha, I still say the suffix arla b'chutz lo'etz is l'kula. It's interesting that Rashi, Anad Gemara, and Brachas throws in a line. Rashi writes, why Safek Arla B'chutz Lo'etz L'kula? Because Arla B'chutz Lo'etz is only Midirabbanan anyway. So the commentaries on Rashi ask, why does he say because Arla B'chutz Lo'etz is Midirabbanan? The Gemara said in Kiddushin that there are two ways to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Arla B'chutz Lo'etz is Halacha. So one opinion is in the Hilchas Medina it's only Midirabbanan. One opinion is that it's halacha l'mashe m'sinai. Whichever opinion you accept, whether you assume that oil of chutz la'aretz is midirabbanan or oil of chutz la'aretz is halacha l'mashe m'sinai, the din is still going to be the same. The suffix oil of chutz la'aretz is going to be l'kula. So what does Rashi say over here in the Gemara and Brachas of Lamed Vav that a suffix oil of chutz la'aretz is l'kula because oil is anyway only midirabbanan and chutz la'aretz? That's contradicted by the Gemara in Kiddushin. So one of the commentaries on the Rashi, the Mishkan is Yankiv, has in the Sefer Kehelas Yankiv, and that Rashi has a very sharp comment. He claims that Rashi must have been of the opinion, he's guessing, thinks that perhaps Rashi must have been of the opinion that if Arla B'chutz La'aretz is only the Rabbanon, then we can understand why the Gemara holds that both a Safik in Metzias and a Safik in Din. Any Safik that you have a right to go L'kula. But if Arla B'chutz La'aretz is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, it's really of a biblical nature. And the Gemara says, still kach nemer halacha. That's the way the halacha was formulated, that vada asur and sveika mutter, then Rashi apparently thinks that it only makes sense to say sveika mutter if you have a suffix in mitzvahs. Tell you what to do when you don't know what the din is. Figure out the things. We don't know. The Torah knows that we don't have Ruach HaKodesh. So the halacha has to tell us what's the din when we know the facts, and what's the din when we don't know the facts. The halacha has to say how do you pass when you're not sure what the facts are. We have Safik Lamayna Lekula and Safik Yisur Lechumer and Sfeika Derabbana Lekula. You have a lot of dinim how to pass in the Machum Safik, but the halacha will never tell us how to pass when we don't know the din. Ask a rabbi who knows. This rabbi can't figure out. You ask a chief rabbi, you ask a bigger rabbi, you ask somebody who does know. What do you mean? The halacha is going to tell us how to act if you don't know the din. A din the rabbanon, that you can ask. If the whole din of Orla B'chutzlot is only with the rabbanon, then you say, you have a machloikis and you can't figure out what the din is. So, it's only the rabbanon anyway, so you have a right to go l'kul. That's how the Mishkan as Yankiv suggests. That perhaps Rashi thought that from the fact that the Gemara in Brachos applies the klal of Safik Orla B'chutzlot l'kul even to a sfeika the dina, not only to a suffix as to what the facts are, even to a sfeika the dina. So that Gemara must be of the assumption, that Gemara must be working on the premise that Orla B'chutzlot is only Midi Rabbah. So now what, just to get down to the facts over here, what role does Tu B'Shvat play with respect to Orla? So the Gemara explains it as follows. When you read the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, the Mishnah distinguishes between an Atiyah and an Elon. And the tia is a young sapling, a young tree that was just planted. And an elon is an old tree. What's the definition of an old tree as opposed to a young tree? So the Gemara says, this is the definition. When you first plant the tree, then it's called an tia. Then the Rosh Hashanah for that young sapling is Rosh Hashanah, Echad B'Tishrei. When you're determining when the 3 years of Orla are up, or when the fourth year of Revai is up, that's determined by Tu B'Shvat. So the Gemara says what it means is the following. Whenever you plant the tree, the Gemara says, it's going to take 14 days till it takes root. Before 14 days, it's just sitting there in the earth, and it didn't sufficiently take root. It's not the Adai Lo Hishvish. So the Gemara says, if I plant the tree in the beginning of Chodesh Av, in the summertime, in the beginning of Chodesh Av, up until Chamishas Av, up until the 15th of Av, so then it's going to have 14 days to take root by the end of Av. Then it's going to have a whole 30 days of Chodesh Elul that will be counted as the first year of the Orla. Because Shloshim Yom Bashana, Kruyim Shana. So the Gemara says, if I planted a tree 44 days before real Rosh Hashanah, Echad B'Tishrei, we, what all the Jews in the world call Rosh Hashanah, so then if you planted your tree 44 days before, so the first 14 days after you put it in the ground, it's going to take those 14 days till it takes root. And then you'll have, after those 14 days are up, then you have 30 days during which it has already taken root. So that's called Shloshim Yom Bashana Kriyim Shana. That counts as the first year of your Orla. Then from this Rosh Hashanah to the next Rosh Hashanah is the second year of Orla. And from that Rosh Hashanah to the next Rosh Hashanah will be the third year of Orla. So then one would think, Fartik, so finished. So the 3 years of Orla are up. And then from this Rosh Hashanah to the next Rosh Hashanah is revised. And the Mishnah says, well, not exactly. Because now that the tree is already an altar tree, It's not an atiyah. It's not no longer a young sapling. It's already 3 years old. It's not really 3 years old. The young children always like to make themselves older. The older people like to make themselves younger. So over here, the tree is only 2 years and 44 days. It's only 2 years and 30 days. But the halacha says that that's called 3 years old. So this tree that sounds like it's 3 years old should no longer be Orla. I should say now starts the fourth year of Revai. So now the halacha sets in and says, no, it's already a 3-year-old tree, that's called an Elon. It's no longer called an Atiyah. So Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos is Tu B'Shvat. So up until Tu B'Shvat, it still belongs to the Orla. up until 4.5 months after that Rosh Hashanah, it still belongs to the Orla. Only starting from that Tu B'Shvat till the next Tu B'Shvat will the Peres be considered revived. That's what the Gemara explains in Rosh Hashanah, what it means. Otherwise you don't understand the words in the Mishnah, that Echa B'Tisha is Rosh Hashanah L'Netios, for saplings, and Tu B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah L'Lana, for the older trees. So the Gemara says that's what it means. If you planted your tree 44 days before Echad B'Tishrei, then Echad B'Tishrei is considered the beginning of the second year for the Orla. But then when it's already 3 years Arab, then the year is only over when you get to, or the fourth year will only be over when you get to the Tu B'Shvat following. The Ran, in the end of the first perek in Kiddushin, has a very interesting comment on the Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachas, on Daf Lamed Vav, the Gemara quoted earlier, the Gemara Kiddushin has this, that whenever you have a dispute regarding the laws of Orlo in Eretz Yisrael, and you have one opinion that's Machman, one opinion that's Mekel, even though in Eretz Yisrael we would paskin the Chumrit, it would come out, let's say, that the majority, the overwhelming majority of the poskim, you have 50 shittas one way and 3 shittas the other. So you find 50 to 3, so you pass like the 50. So even though in Eretz Yisrael we would paskin the Chumre, when it comes to Orla b'chutz la'aretz, we would paskin the Kula. That's what the Gemara calls Kol ha'mekel ba'aretz, halacha kemosa b'chutz la'aretz. Whenever it comes to Orla, and there's a dispute, even though Shanoiz can paskin one, even though we already know how we paskin in Eretz Yisrael, when it comes to Orla b'chutz la'aretz, we go the Kula. What in the world is that based on? So the Ran at the end of the first Perek in Kiddushin has this famous comment, which is quoted by many Mefarshim after the Ran, that this is another form of the principle of Safek Orla B'chutz La'aretz. That whenever you have a dispute, whenever you have a machlokes between the poskim, the Gemara has a lashon that Eilu v'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. I think it was once discussed in the shul. I'm sure on more than one occasion, but I attended once a discussion in the shul. Eilu v'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. What does it mean, Eilu v'Eilu? That the Reform have their Shita, and the Conservative have their Shita, and the Orthodox have their Shita, and the Christians have their Shita, and the Muslims have their Shita, and everything is Eilu V'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim, Cholila V'Cholila. Just like Christianity is not, according to our religion, we don't accept that that's Dibur L'Kim Chayim. And we don't accept that the Islam religion, or the Hindu religion, or the Buddhist religion, other religions are Dibur L'Kim Chayim. So we don't accept that the Conservative version of Judaism, or the Reform version of Judaism, is a valid, legitimate form of Dibur L'Kim Chayim. We don't accept it. It's not within our religion. We say that the Hasidic version of Judaism, with the Misnagdish version, with the Chavetz, this form of Hasidim and that form, the Bali Musaf from Navardik and the Bali Musaf from Kelim and the Hasidim from Lubavitch and the Hasidim from Satmar and the Hasidim from Ger and all the different forms of Hasidim and Misnagdim, if they comply, if they all subscribe to the basic animamus of our faith. So even though there are a lot of differences between them that make them look so different, it looks as if it's different religions, but since they all conform to the basic animamin, so then we say Eilu V'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. Okay. But if someone doesn't conform to these animamin, then you don't say Eilu V'Eilu. What happens in halacha when you have a machlokes? So the Gemara, in speaking of Beisham and Beisilo, the Gemara in Erev and Daf Yud Gimel says Eilu V'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. Why? Because they both believe in God. They both believe in Torah Menashamayim. And they both believed in the Midrash HaTorah and the Dreshes Ben, and they had an argument, they had a debate, exactly how should you be kaveh the din? Should it be like this? Should it be like that? Is Rosh Hashanah L'Ilana? Should it be Rosh Chodesh Shvat? Should it be Tu B'Shvat? So the Gemara says on many of the disputes between Beisham and Beisilo, Eilu v'Eilu, Dibur L'Kim Chayim. So some claim, the Maharal Prague and others write in their form, that this only applies to Beisham and Beisilo, who are on such a high level, they really knew how to learn so well, then you say Eilu V'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. But another Tanoim, Amoroim, you don't say, we wouldn't make such a statement. Whenever you have a machlokes, they say Eilu V'Eilu. But they generally assume not so. Not like the Maharal Prague says. We generally assume that whenever you have a machlokes aposkim, not only Beisham and Beisilo, you can have a machlokes other Tanoim, other Amoroim, you can have a machlokes Rishonim, you can have a machlokes aposkim. From our generation, if you have two honest Rabbonim who are both learned, and they're qualified and they're entitled to have an opinion, and Rav Soloveitchik says one way after looking through all the Gemaras, and Rav Moshe Feinstein Zohar Brachas says another way. So if we assume that they're both honest and they're both learned, and each one studied, not some, he was half asleep when he said it. So the person was awake and he prepared and he studied and he researched, and he gave it what it was his honest opinion without any political negiv. So we assume there also that Eilu V'Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. So that's what the Ran
is explaining in the end of the first Perek in Kiddushin. Whenever you have a machlokes apostim, even if it's 50-1, and we know what the din is. The din is always kipaskim. Achrei rabim mahatos. If it's obvious that the majority of the paskim hold one way, and the minority of the paskim hold the other way, then we follow. We have to follow the majority. We assume that they are the more correct opinion. But when it comes to orla b'chutz lares, the halacha says that any suffek koldehu, any slight suffek, you already have the right to go lakula. Even if it's a suffek, the Ram explains, well, you wouldn't say speka the rabbanu lakula. Let's say, I don't know if this is kosher or treif. I can easily call up the company and find out what the ingredients are. And if they tell me it's treif, I'll know it's treif. So if it will be an issue whether it's treif midiraita, treif midirabbanu, so you have to call up the company. For 25 cents, you have to call up and find out whether it's treif or not. But if it's an issue of orla b'chutz lares, then Allah says, I don't even have to call up. If you have a slight suffek koldehu, the Gemara says before, you don't even have to call up. It doesn't even constitute a midas chasidus to call up. Any slight suffek koldehu in the area of orla b'chutz lares, not another halachas, in the area of orla b'chutz lares, right away you have the right to go lakula. So the Ram explains that it's for the same reason that we say that whenever there's a machlokes, and any issue of orlo kol amekel baaretz halacha kamoisa b'chutz lares, even though there are 50 shittos that say lechumer and only there's one shittos that says lekule, in an Eretz Yisrael we will clearly pass like the chumer digger shita, because achrei rabim lahatos, you have to follow the majority ruling because we assume that they're probably correct. But midei sofik lo nofik, it's still a sofik holdo, it's still a slight sofik in our mind, maybe the one opinion was more correct against the 50. So the Torah says usually achrei rabim lahatos, but whenever it comes to orlo b'chutz lares, any slight suffix holder who tells us already to go lakula. The Gemara, however, has one exception to the rule. In Brachas Daf Lamed Vav, the Gemara says, Beishamai, Bemokam Beisilel, Eino Mishnah. If the dispute is between Beishamai and Beisilel, and we know that the din is like Beisilel against Beishamai, so even when it comes to the issue of Orla B'chutz Lares, we still have to follow Beisilel's opinion. We cannot rely on Beishamai. So that's very awkward. It's about Beisham and Beisila that the Gemara said in Erevin that Eilav Eilav Divi Lekim Chayim, and the Maharami proclaims that that's the only time you say Eilav Eilav Divi Lekim Chayim, only on Beisham and Beisila. And it's on Beishamai that the Gemara pours out all of its anger. The Gemara says, Beishamai, Beishamai B'makam Beisila, ain't a Mishnah. We absolutely never ever follow Beishamai's opinion. We don't even consider it a Safek Koldehu. That's not fair. How can it be? Beishamai is worse off than Machlokes between Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. What's the Beishamai Gezindikt over here? But the commentaries explain that it's not Beishamai did any Avera. It rather means that it's already Nifsek L'Halacha. That's how the Nadav Yehuda explains. When you have a Machloikis and we don't have any Psaq, the Chachamim never determine what the Psaq is. But everybody knows it. 50 opinions on one side, one on the other side. So we know on our own Achrei Rabim Lahatos. We know what the din is to follow the majority rule. But since there never was a Moshe Bezin, there never was an official psak that the din is like the 50 against the 1, so then we still consider in the back of our minds that the one opinion constitutes a suffik koldehu. When it comes to orla b'chutz lares, we consider that a suffik. And a suffik koldehu is sufficient to be makel to rely on for orla b'chutz lares. However, in the case of the Shama Bisil, the Gemara says they sat down and they discussed it and they voted. And after they voted, they came to the final determination, to the conclusion that the din is like Beisilel against Beishamai. So once they voted, once it's already nifsek lahalacha one way, then you have no right to be makel b'chutz lares like the other opinion. Then we no longer consider it a suffik. It's not even considered a suffik koldehu. There is an interesting dispute that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch regarding the issue of orla b'chutz lares. This din that we observe in America, if you plant a tree or you plant a bush or you buy from someone else, you buy from someone who previously owned your yard and they already planted the tree and the bush. So if you don't know which year you're holding by and you're thinking maybe that the 4 years are up already, the 3-4 years are up, so then it's a suffik orla b'chutz lares and you don't even have to ask. Even if the previous owner was a religious Jew, he doesn't have to tell you. He's not violating this nivalistic and nichshol. The Gemara says, because if you don't, whatever you don't know doesn't hurt you in the area of orla. In other areas it does, but in the area of orla, the Gemara says, if you don't know, it's kosher. You don't have to ask and he doesn't have to say. But what happens if you do know? You were there and you know bevadai. So then the first 3 years the fruits that grow are rasa b'achila b'hano, and you have to get rid of them. What about the fourth year? Does the law of the fourth year, does the law of revai apply outside of Eretz Yisrael? When you read the Chumash, the Chumash writes that all these dinim only apply in Eretz Yisrael. Kisavaya al-Hor. Notwithstanding the simple reading of the Chumash, the Gemara says that there is a halacha, either a din de Rabbanon or a halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, that the laws of our law apply even to chutzlor. Ola b'chutzlor, it says mehalocha. That's the Mishnah Kiddush. But the Gemara never says explicitly what is the halacha with respect to Rabbi. What about the parents that grow the fourth year? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that this was an old dispute between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos. The Rambam writes explicitly that the laws of Orla alone, only the laws of the first 3 years, the laws of Orla apply to Chutz Lares, but the laws of Revai do not apply. So Halacha L'Moshe Misinai only was formulated with respect to Orla and never said a word with respect to Neter Revai. Tosfos in Kiddushin and in Brachas and other places disagrees. But the Rambam says explicitly it cannot be. That just like the laws of Orla, the first 3 years apply to Chutz Lares, so too the laws of Revai apply to Chutz Lares. Halacha L'maisa, how do we paskin? So in the Shulchan Aruch and Yerideya and Simin Reish Tzadik Daled, both opinions are quoted. And then the Ramah says that our psak is that Kol HaMekel Ba'aret, Halacha K'moisa B'Chutz Lares. There is a dispute in the Gemara in Brachas and Daf Lamed Hei whether the law of Revai, the law of the fourth year, the parents that grow in the fourth year, have to be brought to Yerushalayim to be eaten the Kedusha of the Tahara, or if the person finds that too difficult or is unable to, whatever, then he's paid to the parents and he takes the money and takes it to Yerushalayim, or he destroys the money, the din of pidyon that the Revai. So the Gemara has a dispute regarding the laws of Revai. Does that only apply to Kerem Revai? Does it only apply to grapes, to vines? Or does it even apply to Neter Revai? It applies to any fruits that grow on a tree. The laws of Orla, Alpipas, the laws of the first 3 years, that it's also Bachila Ba'anoah, the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim say clearly apply to all trees. It's certainly not limited dafka to grapes. It's a very obscure shita that says that should be limited to grapes also. So it's generally assumed 99 out of 100 Rishonim say that the laws of Orla certainly apply to all trees. But the question the Gemara has is regarding Revai. The laws of the fourth year, are they limited dafka to grapes or do they apply to all trees? So even though in Eretz Yisrael we paskin lechumre, that the laws of Revai even apply to Neta, to all the Nitiyas, not only to Kerem, but the Ramah says, with respect to Chutz Lares, since in Eretz Yisrael there was such an opinion, there is such an opinion existing, that the laws of Revai should be limited dafke to grapes, that we apply this klal, kalal mekel bar, talacha kamasa b'chutz lares, and we say that in Chutz Lares, the laws of Revai will only apply to grapes. That's why Jews in Europe and in America, who have grapevines, so they know that the first 3 years, whatever grows, depending on whatever grows, is also b'achila b'ano. Whatever grows the fourth year, they have to be paided. But if they have, let's say, apple trees, or pear trees, or other trees, anything other than grapes, so those who follow the Ramah, by the Ashkenazim, we follow the Ramah, so we don't bother to be paided. We're only paided the pears that grow in the fourth year if it's a grapevine. But if it's other trees, then you don't have to be paided. Rabbi Kiva Eger, on the Yerideya here, quotes a further kula. He quotes in the name of the Sefer HaShiltos that opinion in the Gemara, that opinion that the Talmud quotes, that the laws of Revai, the laws of the fourth year, only apply to Kerem, doesn't only mean that it only applies to grapes. It only applies to grapes that grow in a specific formation. You have to have Shtayim Keneged Shtayim, and the fifth one be Emsa. You have to have five vines. If you only have one or two or three or four vines, then it doesn't have enough Kerem. Kerem is not identical with grapes. Gifanim. Gifanim means that you plant the grapes. Kerem means that the grapes grow in a specific formation. You have four vines in each corner and then one vine growing in the middle within a certain proximity to each other. Not too close to each other, not too far away from each other. But if you only have single vines, you don't have five, or you have five and they're not growing in this shape, in this fashion, then Rabbi Kivega wants to even go a further cooler to say that that's also, you wouldn't be machmer to apply the laws of Revai in Chutz Lares. What exactly is one supposed to do if he has the Revai? Let's say a person has a vine and he wants to be paid the vine. So what does he do when he's paid the vine? So in the Shulchan Aruch it says that you pay the on a shove pruto. Even though the grapes that grow in the fourth year are worth, let's say, $100, $500, you don't have to give a full $500. You can just take a penny and be paid all of the payers of Revai, all the payers of the fourth year, and that one penny. Where does it say this in the Gemara? The Gemara just says it's in the Hegdish. The Gemara quotes Shmuel's din Hegdish Shavimana Shechilal Shavaputim Echulal. The Gemara says that if you have Hegdish that's worth $100 and you cheated the Hegdish by only being paid it on a pruta, on a penny, so b'dayeved, the pidyon of the Hegdish is acceptable, it's valid because of the principle of Bav Metziah, Einoi Noel LaHegdish. That if you cheated Hegdish, b'dayeved is farfal. There's no din of Einoi. But how does Tosfos, how did the Rambam know that this then Aveino Noel Hegdish, how do they know that it applies to Maisha Sheni? We do a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael, we pay the Maisha Sheni, tons and tons of Maisha Sheni, put down a penny.
What right do you have to be paid on a pruta? How do you know you have a right to be paid in Neter Avai on a pruta? So this is what Tosfos and the Rambam say. Other Rishonim say not so. The Rambam quotes that the Goyim held not so. You have to be paid a davke b'shavio on the full value of the Maaseh Sheni, the full value of the Neter Avai. How do Tosfos and the Rishonim know that the principle of Shmuel, that Hegdush of a Mona, Shechilo, Shavaputa Mechulol, can even apply to Maaseh Sheni and to Neter Avai? So the Vilna Goyim, in his commentary on Yeridei, on this Timon, writes an original interpretation in Tosfos. He says that in the Talmud there is a dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir in the end of the second parak in Kiddushin regarding Maaseh Sheni. Do we consider Maaseh Sheni and that the Revai for that matter, same status? Do we consider them Momen Gavoya or do we consider them Momen Hedyot? Should we consider it as if it's Hegdish, as if it belongs to Hegdish, or no? It's Momen Hedyot, Momen Bayim, as if it belongs to me. What's the difference? Let's say I want to be Mekadosh and Isha, I want to marry a woman, and instead of giving her a ring and saying Hariyat Mekudesh Asli B'Tabas, I give her a lollipop. But the lollipop is Shove Puto, and it's a Mutabano, so she's Mekudesh. I give her a steak, I give her an apple, an orange, a date. Mishnah talks about being Mekadosh and Isha with a date. It's Kachali B'Tamaruzu, Mekadosh the girl on a date. So what happens instead of giving a date, instead of giving a lollipop, whatever, a candy, what if he gives some ice of shame? My shame is worth a lot of money. So the Mishnah says, well, it depends. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion Maaseh Sheni is Mom and Bailam, it belongs to you. So it's regular Kiddushin. He gave Yishav a Pruta, she's in Kiddush. If you hold like Rabbi Meir's obscure opinion, Maaseh Sheni is Mom and Gavoya, that didn't belong to you in the first place, you're not a Balabas to give it to the girl, and the girl is not in Kiddushin, Moshe Lamadam Adayme, if you would give her a steak from a carbon. The Tsar HaKabonis is Mom and Gavoya, even though you have a right to eat it, but you can't be Mekadosh and Isha with it. So here too, you wouldn't be able to be Mekadosh and Isha with the Maaseh Sheni, with the Neter Avai. How do we pass it? So the Gemara says that normally, whenever there's a dispute between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, Halachik Rav Yehuda. Whenever Rav Meir argues with anybody, he always loses. The Gemara says Rav Meir was so sharp. The Gemara says in Erev, in Adaf Yom Gimel, he was so sharp that Talmidim couldn't follow his shiurim. He had very few followers. He had very few followers. And whenever it came to count the cheshbon, who holds this, who holds that way, he was always in the minority. The Gemara says he used to give a shiur, he used to give 150 explanations, the tosav, the mutar, one after the other, they couldn't follow what he himself held. Does he hold it, the tosav, does he hold mutar? He just gave all the cheshbon, they couldn't figure out what his sheet it was. So they didn't like to go to his sheet. So the Gemara says that normally we rarely pass like Rav Meir, but this is one of the rare instances that we do pass like Rav Meir. We pass from the Maaseh Sheni is Momen Gavoya. So the Vilna Gaon says, since we pass from the Maaseh Sheni is Momen Gavoya, therefore the din of Shmuel at Hegdash of Emona, Shechilol, Shavaputa, Mechulol, applies also to Maaseh Sheni and to Neter Avai. This is considered Hegdash. Maaseh Sheni and Neter Avai has the same status of Hegdash. We say that there's a din of Einoi Noel LeHegdash. Here in the Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Tzadik Dalet, it says that when you pay to your Neter Avai, you can be paid, it doesn't say on a pruta, it doesn't say you put a penny aside a pruta, it says you can be paid on a shove a pruta, and anything that's worth a penny or more. So this is really a debatable issue, because the Talmud tells us in Gemara Bechoris that although in Kol HaTorah Kula, shove a kesef is kekesef, you can make Kaddish and Isha either by giving cash or by giving a ring. You can make Pidyon HaBen either by giving the coin money, by giving him diamonds, or by giving him a talis, or a hat, or a gartel, or whatever, a becher, or in other areas of Allah, you can be paid a hegdash either by giving cash, and also a kesef to come, either you give cash, or you give shavu kesef. You can buy, let's say, mechiras chomesh, when the rabbi sells the chomesh to the guy, so the guy can either pay in cash, or you can pay in shavu kesef. When you buy karka, whenever you buy, you sell anything, any time that kesef is required, an adama mazik has to pay either kesef, shavu kesef. Any time kesef is good, shavu kesef is also good, with three exceptions. So one of the three exceptions to the rule is pidyon maaseh sheni. The pasuk in Chumash reads v'tzarta hakesef liyodecho, and halacha has a tradition on that pasuk v'tzarta that we require kesef sheyesh olav tzura. That we don't allow pidyon maaseh sheni on shavu kesef, has to be davka on cash. Kesef sheyesh olav tzura, even a simon is no good. You have to davka matbea, which was minted by the government with a specific tzura. Has to have some picture, some kind of writing or some picture on the tzura, on the coin. So if that's a special din in pidyon maaseh sheni and neter avai, so here the Rishonim ask, kili achreinim ask, how can it say in the Shulchan Aruch that you can be paid of the neter avai on a shove pruto? Shove pruto is not good. You need davke pruto. How can it say that shove pruto is good? So the Vilna Goyen just writes in his commentary that this is a misprint. It's a Torah Sefer, and it should say the pruto. that there is no such thing as being paider, because the din of shavah kesef kekesef doesn't apply over here. Here the din is governed by the pasuk, the tzarta kesef biyadecha, that we require davke kesef sheyesh olav tzur. Others find it difficult to say that this is a misprint in Shulchan Aruch, and a misprint in Tosfos, and a misprint in the Shiltas, and a misprint in 25 sources. Every time it's written, it says you can be prayed on the Shavuot Pruta. How can it be everybody made the same misprint? All the scribes wrote the same mistake, and nobody realized that 500-600 years that it's a misprint. So the Netziv, the Perishalei Berlin, that's the father of Rav Meir Bar Ilan, and Rav Chaim Berlin, he has two sons. One was Rav Meir Bar Ilan, one was Rav Chaim Berlin. So the Netziv, who is the Rosh Hashivim Valozhin, has a very fascinating comment in his Sefer. He has a biur on the Shultas. He points out another strange thing. The din is when you, those who live in Eretz Yisrael will know that whenever they mafrish Truma Gedoyla, Maisa Rishon, Maisa Sheni, when they pray to the Maisa Sheni, so they're always Mosef Chomish. So there's no Chomish. When you pray to your own Maisa Sheni, you have to be Mosef Chomish. So if you only want to give a pruto for the purpose of the whole Pidyon Maisa Sheni, so then you have to say, Hu v'chum shemuchul ala la pruta hazeh. I declare that the Maisa Sheni is worth 4/5 of a pruta, and adding on 1/5 of a pruta as a chomish. Chomish doesn't mean 20%; it means 25%. So I establish, I say, instead of really declaring that the Maisa Sheni is worth $500 or $1,000, I say no, the whole Maisa Sheni is only worth 4/5 of a pruta, and the keren I give is 4/5, and my chomish is going to be 1/5 of a pruta. Dacha kol, I'm giving one pruta, hu v'chumsho, for the keren and for the chomish. I'm giving one pruta to patter up the whole thing. So usually we know when you pray the Maisa Sheni, you say, Hu v'chumshem chul ala pruta. Here they left out the din of chaymesh. So the Netziv asks, how come the Shultas and the Taisis and the Shulchan Aruch, everybody also a Taz Sefer, they all left out the chaymesh. What happened? V'chatchili have to be Maisa Chaymesh. And then also the Shultas and the Taisis and many Rishonim left out the bracha. It says Beferish, when you pray the Maisa Sheni, when you pray the Netarai, you have to say a bracha. How come over here they left out the bracha? Sheker Deshona, B'mitzvayse V'tzivonu, Alpidyon Netarai. In Chutz Loretz, you don't say a bracha because it's a machlok. It's a sofik, but you have to be paid at the Revai. So even though we say that, by Kerem we're machmer, but that's also a sofik. The Rambam's opinion is that even by Kerem there's not din of Revai. So we understand why sofik brachas loch in Chutz Loretz. But even in Eretz Yisrael, some seem to leave out the bracha. How can that be? That's a question. So the Shiltas claims that. As a whole beautiful Shtikul Torah in his commentary on the Shiltas and the Netziv, in his beer on the Shiltas, writes in Siman Kuf, he wants to answer these kashas with a list of other kashas. He claims that you really have two psukim. Tosfos has another kash in Brachas Daf Lamed Hey. Why do you need two psukim to tell you that it is in a pidyon neter revai? One pasuk reads that the Torahs that grow in the fourth year, Bashana Harvish, year called Piryo Kodesh Hilulim Lashem, and the Gemara interprets the pasuk Hilulim Chilulim. I read the word as if it were written, as if the hay were written as a ches. Achlei v'hoder achlei. First you have to be mechalo. First you have to be paid in the neter vai, and then you can eat it. So Tosfos is bothered with a kasha. Why do I need this pasuk to tell me that you can be paid in the neter vai? I have a pasuk that says I can be paid in my tesheni. It says the tzarta kesef biyodecha, and I have a gzereshov of kodesh kodesh connecting my tesheni with the neter vai. So why do I need an additional pasuk of hilulim to tell me that there's an act, that you have the ability to be paid in the neter vai? Everything should be able to be learned out with the gzereshov. So the Netziv explains that these psukim must be teaching us two different halachas, the two different forms of pidyon my tesheni. He has this whole shtikul Torah in one short paragraph. He has all the five kashas with the teretz all in one short. Mamish, this could be printed up in a whole five-page essay. He writes it in one short paragraph. So he says these are clearly two distinct halachas. There's one halacha of kodesh kodesh that you learn out pidyon from Maisa Sheni, where the pidyon is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to bring the Maisa Sheni to Yerushalayim, and if you can't bring it, then it's a mitzvah to be paid in the Maisa Sheni and bring the money to Yerushalayim and buy food with that money. Then he says the din of kodesh hilul machle v'hadar achle is a different din. That's a pidyon hamatir. That's not a pidyon shal mitzvah. That's a din that you're forbidden to eat the neter revai outside of Yerushalayim, and if you want to eat it chutz l'Yerushalayim, you have to have a matar of pidyon. But that's not a pidyon shal mitzvah to be paid to bring the money to Yerushalayim. Not mechuyav. You can be paid and leave the money here, or you can leave the peres here and let the peres rot. So he says we need these two psukim to tell us these two different types of pidyon, and then he proceeds to explain based on the psukim that the pidyon that's only a matir doesn't require dafke kesef sheyesh alav tzura. You can use shavah kesef also.
Whereas the pinyon that's a mitzvah, there I have a pasuk, but tzatzah kesa biyadecha, the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, that speaks of pinyon ma'aseh sheni, there it's a mitzvah of pinyon, and that requires dafke kesef. So you need dafke kesef sheyesh alav tzura. Shavu kesef would be no good. And then he explains, that's why the one pinyon requires a bracha, and the other one does not. When you pay the ma'aseh sheni, where there's a mitzvah to bring it to Yerushalayim, or there's a mitzvah to be paid and bring the money to Yerushalayim, when you do that act of pinyon, then you do say a bracha. When you pay to the Netter of Ayba Chutz Lorez, there's no mitzvah to be paid, there's no mitzvah to bring it. It's just if you want to be permitted to eat it, Chutz Yerushalayim, you have to have a pidyon hamatir. So that pidyon hamatir doesn't require a bracha, and it doesn't require dafke pruta, you can use dashava pruta, and you wouldn't require any chaymish for that. The halacha of chaymish is only written by the pidyon shal mitzvah. By the pidyon hamatir, it wouldn't make sense to require a chaymish, because the Gemara explains that tosefet chaymish is only needed lechatchila. But it's not miyake b'diyevet, and Tosis postulates a klal that the distinction between latchil and b'diyevet only makes sense in the area of mitzvahs and doesn't make sense at all in the area of amatir. So just to review b'kitzer, these are the four halachas where Tu Bishvat plays a role. We have to determine that the year is ended for the Peiris and now begins a new year with respect to the first halacha of not to be mafish mishana al ashniya. With respect to the second halacha, you have to determine whether you're mafish ma'aseh sheni or ma'aseh rani. Do the Peiris belong to the shana ashniya, to the shana ashlishis? Do they belong to the shana ashlishis or to the shana haravitz? With respect to the third din, that's disputable. With respect to Kedushas Peiris Shviz, whether you say that the cutoff point is Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, as the Rambam writes, so they say no. Even with respect to determining whether the Peiris Ha'ilon have the Kedushas Peiris Shviz, there too, like many Achronim claim and some Rishonim seem to imply, there too I declare that the cutoff point would be Tu Bishvat. And the fourth din, which is the main din that the Shulchan Aruch discusses Bariches based on the Gemara, is the dinim, the halachas of Orlo and Neter Revai, which apply even to Chutzlar. The question is, we have a very strange minhag. In Shulchan Aruch, we have minhag that we don't say Tachnun on Tu Bishvat. This year it's on Shabbos, so of course we're not going to say any Tachnun. We don't say Avarachnun. Because the day on which, if it would have been on a weekday, we wouldn't have said Tachnun, so we don't say Avarachnun. What in the world is that based on? What do you mean? You don't say Tachnun on Tu Bishvat? What's our Yom Tov does? That sounds like the Yiddish folklore, that the wind is howling and the blowing shofar and the bal tefillah, the tree has a chazan with the snow. What in the world? What's our Yom Tov do? It has nothing to do. After you study all these dinim with the Hafrashas, Trumas, Nemaizah, with the Orla, with the Shemitah, it has nothing to do with the Yom Tov. What kind of a Yom Tov is it? So in the Shulchan Aruch, this is quoted from the Mordechai. He's the original source of deleting the Tachnun on Tu Bishvat. He gives a mocker that's very, very obscure. The pasuk in the Chumash reads, Ki ha'odam eitz ha'sodeh. So he says, since man is compared to the trees, and Tu Bishvat is the Rosh Hashanah Leilana, so Tu Bishvat is our Rosh Hashanah, so that's why we celebrate and we don't take time. It's very difficult. Ki Hodam Eit Hashanah is Bitzniyah. The Chumash says, Ki Sok Svalir, when you attack the enemy, and you have the city under siege, you're not permitted to chop down the trees. Ki Hodam Eit Hashanah Lovam Yipanecha Bamotzar. Are the trees human beings? That's part of the enemy. You're not allowed to chop down the trees. Lois Ashkos HaSeitzo. L'derech Alei HaGarden. Not allowed to chop down the trees. But that pasuk is Bitzniyah. What did he quote? It's an obscure pasuk over here. But the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch seem to say a little differently. In the Kaf HaChaim he writes that many have the minhag to eat peiros from the Zayin Minim Shenistapcha Behem Eretz Yisrael. It's not boxer. Boxer is not from the Zayin Minim Shenistapcha Behem Eretz Yisrael. Many have the minhag to eat Zayin Minim. Many have the minhag to study Hilchas Shmiteh, Hilchas Shumas HaMaisis, Hilchas Orla, these dinim, to study these dinim until Bishvat. I think what the Kaf HaChaim means, what he quotes from the early Achronim, is that the Jews, all the years that they were traveling through the Golos, felt that they didn't have any of these dinim to observe. They wanted to have some kind of a connection with Eretz Yisrael. So they made a yontav, the Zeichel Eretz Yisrael. That yontav was a Tu Bishvat. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have another Tu Bishvat. We have a real yontav, not Tu Bishvat, a yontav, Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim. It would appear from the Shulchan Aruch that there's nothing wrong with establishing a yontav just for the sake of keeping a kesher with Eretz Yisrael, because that's what the Tu Bishvat always was. That's the only reason why they didn't say Tachnun. There's no reason under the sun why you shouldn't say Tachnun, just because Tu Bishvat is relevant for the purposes of Trumas and Maisis and Shemitah and Orla and Avai and Hafrosha and Mishan al Chavetor. Just to have a yontav that we should chazer over, we should remember that we have a kesher with Eretz Yisrael, we have mitzvah to Yisbar. May the Rebbeinu Shalom give us all the tzchi, we should all be able to move to Eretz Yisrael and to fulfill all of the dinim, not just the laws of Orla v'chutzlar, the laws of Orla v'Eretz Yisrael.
Leah's girl, Amen.